Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. On a dark and cold Sunday evening, here coming to you from Denver, Colorado. This is the show where we don't tolerate sponsors and all that. And it's a somber day everywhere around the world. And I'm just going to get right to it. Because I'm going to formulate what I have to say as the show progresses. I want to open with a story, a murder-suicide story. This is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. A man and woman are dead after a murder-suicide Friday night inside the Excalibur Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. The man died at the scene from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The woman died at University Medical Center about 2 hours later. The hotel remained open. A message posted on the Excalibur's Facebook page about 10:30 p.m. Friday night read, quote, "An apparent domestic incident occurred at Excalibur this evening. Local authorities have the matter under control," unquote. And I would beg to differ with that analysis by the Excalibur staff. I don't think local authorities have the matter under control, whether in Las Vegas or Newtown, Connecticut, or Aurora, Colorado, or anywhere else. I don't think local authorities have the matter under control. An addendum to this story, Friday, according to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Friday was not the first time a high-profile act of violence has erupted along the Vegas Strip. In the summer of 2011, four people were killed in unrelated homicides along Las Vegas Boulevard. In another case, a man fatally punched another man after a confrontation in a bathroom. September 2008, a 23-year-old prostitute fatally stabbed another prostitute in the neck in the lobby at Bally's. They were fighting over their pimp. A year earlier, a man was killed by a homemade bomb blast at the Luxor parking garage. The bomb had been placed by the ex-boyfriend of the man's girlfriend. And in 2007, a man opened fire at New York, spraying bullets down the casino floor, wounding four unsuspecting tourists. And I would again posit that local authorities do not have the matter under control. Earlier today, I was standing at the counter at a local sandwich shop that we've eaten at for years. Above the tattooed lip ring, ear grommet girl standing at the cash register, above her head was the big blackboard. And it was empty. And this is one of those big blackboards that they have at a sandwich shop that has all their specials, all their sandwiches. I've seen it there for years. And it was empty, and I asked the young lip-ringed, ear-grommet, tattooed cashier if they were revamping their blackboard menu. And she said they were. She said that they were having some difficulty, though, because the restaurant's employees, none of them seemed to know how to write in cursive, and the manager wanted it to be written stylistically in cursive, and they were having a problem because none of the millennial tattooed, ear-grommeted, lip-ringed employees had the ability to write in cursive. The girl noted that, you know, she said, you know, they don't teach cursive in school anymore, so none of us really know how to do it. And there were several employees standing around, and they chuckled, and I said, you know, I don't know what they teach at the government schools anymore besides how to put a condom on a banana and how to duck and cover. And one of the male employees looked at me and he smirked and he said, you know, that's pretty good. He said, normally I would laugh, but he didn't laugh. And normally I would laugh too. And normally we like to have some fun on the show. We like to open with something lighthearted and we don't like to be all gloom and doom around here. Normally we would laugh, but I find it hard to laugh these past few days. We've been finding out more and more about this mass murderer, Adam Lanza, who butchered 20 children, first graders. I've got a story here from ABC. Adam Lanza's mother, Nancy, was the first victim of his Friday shooting spree. Lanza shot Nancy, his mother, in the face and then drove her car to Sandy Hook Elementary, where he killed 20 students, 6 adults, before killing himself. Now, according to Marcia Lanza, who is Adam's aunt and Nancy's ex-sister-in-law, she said that the mom, Nancy, wound up homeschooling young Adam Lanza because she battled with the school district. Adam had attended the local high school at least through part of the 10th grade. Nancy Lanza divorced her husband, Peter, in 2009 when Adam was 17. So here we have an odd kid at the least, and mentally disabled, mentally deranged at worst. He was mainstreamed into a godless educational institution. His family was shattered by divorce. And here's a young, unstable man in a world, in a godless institution, educated by a godless media culture, with no social stigma, no social stigmas against murder or suicide any longer. And now you may say, Doug, there are social stigmas against murder. We have laws against murder, after all. But in listening to the news coverage of this horrific crime, I would have to disagree that there is any social stigma against murder. It seems that if someone does decide to commit a murder and suicide to solve whatever problems they perceive in their life, they'll be memorialized in candlelight vigils and endless news segments with humanists hand-wringing, trying to figure out why. Well, what was I just reading on the web before I got on the air? At a church, St. Rose of Lima, Roman Catholic Church, they were hosting a vigil, a mass service, today, Sunday, when a bomb threat was called in, and they had to evacuate the church in Newtown, Connecticut, just 2 days after this horrific crime. So the whole world seems to be insane. It seems to be insane. At a time when most of us are just in shock and stunned at the gravity of our cultural collapse and the fruits that are being produced, there are still young people out there who've been educated by the culture and their religious institutions and their government educational institutions. And everything is upside down in their minds. That someone would call in a bomb threat to this church. I have a quote from the Monsignor at the church. Monsignor Robert Weiss says that he has been meeting with families since the day of the shooting. This is according to the Reuters story. Monsignor Weiss has been meeting with the families since the day of the shooting, fielding many questions, and he said, quote, "I don't have any answers," unquote. That's the religious leader there in Newtown. He has no answers. Well, I have some answers. I don't know that I have any answers, but I can point you to the man who has the answers because I know him personally. His name is Jesus Christ, and he has the answers. What would he say were he to be interviewed by the humanists at CNN or Fox News? I was driving home yesterday from Phoenix and on the road for hours, and I had to turn the news off because I could not stand to listen to these ignorant children, humanists, wringing their hands, trying to figure out why, advising parents how to talk to their children. Well, tell your children that their school is safe and that everything's going to be okay. And this isn't the kind of thing that happens all the time. Well, I don't think you should lie to your children like the heathens on CNN and the various psychobabblers that were interviewed on Fox News. I don't think you should lie to your children and tell them that their school is safe and that everything's going to be okay, because everything is not going to be okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the family has been broken. And when I say the family, I'm talking about Adam Lanza's family. I'm talking about our corporate family as a civilization. It has been broken and it's been handed over to deviants and perverts. And the judgment of a righteous God is falling upon us, collectively, and in the case of Nancy Lanza's family, individually. And I want to remind you that the judgment of a righteous God does not require a righteous God to direct his vengeance upon us. It doesn't require the active intervention of a righteous and holy God for his judgment to fall upon us. Ladies and gentlemen, all that's required for the judgment of a righteous God to fall upon a people is the absence of that righteous God from the consciousness of that people. And as our families and as our institutions have been sacrificed upon the altar of hedonistic freedom, the judgment of a righteous God is falling upon us. When the children cry, let them know we try. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new. Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining the broadcast this cold, dark evening. I want to read from the book of Jeremiah in the 33rd chapter. Behold, I will bring it health and healing. I will heal them and reveal to them the abundance of peace and truth. I will cleanse them from all their iniquity by which they have sinned against me, and I will pardon all their iniquities by which they have sinned and by which they have transgressed against me. Then it shall be to me a name of joy, a praise and honor before all the nations of the earth, who shall hear all the good that I do to them. They shall fear and tremble for all the goodness and all the prosperity that I provide. So Jesus Christ has the answer, ladies and gentlemen, and the answer is Him. It's Him. And in banishing Him from the landscape, we have invited judgment upon ourselves. And Lord knows we cannot deal with it. We cannot abide it. We cannot stand it. Because the judgment of a righteous God is more than any mere mortal can even comprehend. And in saying that this horrific crime in Newtown, Connecticut is incomprehensible, I just want to say that should we continue to turn our faces from Him, that the incomprehensible will become a daily event. Is it not already a daily event? This is just an amplified, more intense version of what's happening every day in families, in institutions, in clinics, in cities and towns, and in the hearts of men, ladies and gentlemen. And the answer is Jesus Christ. And and I don't know what else to say. And I don't think there's anything else to be said except that the answer lies in a reliance upon Him, in an acknowledgement of Him, in a celebration of Him and His Word, and in not doing so, we have brought this judgment upon ourselves. Let's turn to some other news. We'll try, can we find any sanity? Let's say we go back to old Europe. I have a story from the Telegraph in London. This is from France. An unnamed teacher in France handed out a homework note to pupils of the school there in Montmereau Saint-Cybard in southwest France. The homework assignment read thusly, quote, "You've just turned 18 and have decided to end your life. Your decision appears to be irrevocable. As a final effort, you decide to explain the reasons for your act. In setting out your self-portrait, you describe all the disgust you feel for yourself. Your text must bring up certain events in your life at the root of this feeling." Unquote. That's a homework assignment given to government school children in France. The Telegraph reports that a group of shocked parents wrote an anonymous note to the headmaster and local school authority saying, quote, "We are horrified that this type of topic should be proposed to children between 13 and 14 years old." One parent told the local newspaper that her son was embarrassed to let her see his suicide note and the teacher's comment, which read, quote, "Not precise enough," unquote. The local education authority head said the teacher had been officially notified of his suspension, adding, quote, "Telling a pupil that he is about to end his life and that he must recount it appears troubling to us," unquote. So the local education authorities there are troubled by this. by the way, this local school authority has had to cope with two students who have committed suicide in recent months. And do you think that's the end of the story in old Europe, ladies and gentlemen, who turned their back on God, I don't know, 300-400 years ago? No, that's not the end of the story, because the Telegraph reports that as the media storm around the suspension of the teacher grew, many colleagues, parents, and pupils began to rally behind the teacher. One pupil said, "He's our favorite teacher. We don't want him to be punished." Villagers became generally supportive, with one young mother saying, "What do you think they talk about in the playground? And the images they see on TV are far more shocking than this homework assignment." Suicide is a part of daily life. Perhaps the teacher wished to raise their awareness of the issue, said another parent. By Tuesday afternoon, a group of parents issued a statement calling for the teacher's immediate return to his post. Why, you might ask? They said, we want him immediately returned to his post, quote, for the good of our children, unquote. The suicide of a civilization is occurring, ladies and gentlemen, right before our very eyes. I remember I took a Western civilization course when I attempted to go to college. And about halfway through that Western civilization course, there were two things I realized. Number one, I realized that Western civilization is the greatest gift God has ever given humanity. And the second thing I realized was that I could no longer go to college because I could not stand the way it was portrayed by the heathen who was teaching the class. He was a United Methodist minister as well as a Western civilization instructor. Anyway, I made it through the course and I got an A, but I dropped out thereafter. Let's go to England in search of some sanity as our civilization collapses helplessly on top of a poorly worded suicide note. From London, this is from the Associated Press. The British government announced last Tuesday that it will introduce a bill next year legalizing homosexual marriage, but banning the Church of England from conducting such ceremonies. Maria Miller is the Equalities Minister there in England. She's the Equalities Minister. She said the legislation would authorize same-sex civil marriages as well as religious ceremonies if religions decide to opt in. Maria said, she's the Equalities Minister there in the United Kingdom. She said, quote, I feel strongly that if a couple wish to show their love and commitment to each other, the state should not stand in their way. For me, extending marriage to same-sex couples will strengthen and not weaken this vital institution. Unquote. That's Maria Miller, the Equalities Minister there in England. She also told lawmakers that no religious organizations will ever be forced to conduct marriages for same-sex couples. Really? You know, I would say, Maria, that after this, after legalizing homosexual marriage, religious institutions are moot. They're meaningless. They have no purpose any longer. And for her to assert that religious organizations will never, ever be forced to conduct marriages for homosexuals is a bald-faced lie. The religious institutions will be destroyed by this. I said earlier, our families have been handed over to deviants and perverts, corrupt heathens and humanists, and they have broken it and destroyed it. And homosexual marriage is just the finishing touch on the destruction of the glue that holds civilization together. Civilization is a frail thing, ladies and gentlemen. It's a gilded layer on top of festering and seething hatreds that could burst forth at any moment. And we've been blessed by God to have a civilization such as we have had. But religious institutions will be rendered moot, at least in England. Since 2005, the AP reports, homosexuals in Britain have been able to form civil partnerships, but they have not been given the label of marriage. And that's one thing that the homosexualists and the humanists and the heathens and Hillary and Hollywood and the homosexuals will not abide. They will take the label of marriage and they will wrench it from the normal. They will pry it from the hands of the civilized. And they will apply it to their deviant, self-destructive, suicidal selves. And all mankind will pay the price. And they've just about accomplished it now in the United Kingdom. The AP reports that the bill is likely to have enough support in Parliament to become law. Meanwhile, continuing our tour of old Europe, on this cold, dark Sunday night, from Amsterdam, another Associated Press story, Amsterdam's mayor said last week he would formally ban students from smoking marijuana at school, making the Dutch capital the first city in the Netherlands to do such a thing. Yes, apparently, under the tolerance principle there in the Netherlands, marijuana is technically illegal in Amsterdam, but police can't prosecute people for possessing small amounts. And that's the loophole, according to the Associated Press, that's made possible Amsterdam's famed coffee shops, which are cafes where marijuana is sold openly. But it has also had an unwanted side effect that Dutch children are frequently exposed to the drug in public areas. I would question the Associated Press's assumption that the side effect of Dutch children being exposed to drug use is an unwanted side effect. I don't think it's unwanted by the corrupt, deviant perverts to whom we have handed our civilization over. I think it is a completely desired and calculated side effect, and I think they're just fine with it. A city spokeswoman said schools have always forbidden pot, but found it difficult to enforce the policy when students smoke either on campus or near campus, because the students challenge the administrators at the school to do anything about it, and the administrators don't know. They look at themselves in the mirror, and they look at each other, and they say, well, what can we do about it? What can we do? We've eliminated God. We've eliminated his commandments. We've eliminated all of his advice. We've eliminated all consciousness or awareness of the living and righteous God who is the judge of all the earth. We've eliminated all that. And pot is legal. What can we do about it? And they've been able to do nothing about it, but now they're going to pass a rule that students can't smoke pot at school. The AP reports that after a change in national law, Amsterdam will now be able to declare no toking zones, they call them. Areas like schools and playgrounds. They're going to do that under a public nuisance ordinance. And then police can levy fines against students or anyone else who flout the new rules. So do you not think that civil liberties organizations similar to the ACLU in Amsterdam are not going to take up a challenge on this and ask, upon what foundation, upon what basis do you pass this new rule? You're going to pass this on a public nuisance ordinance? Do you not think they will challenge this in court? And do you think that the civil authorities, the governing officials in Amsterdam, will have anything that they can say to support their new rule? When they've abandoned all morality, they have nothing. Their whole civilization now stands upon nothing but shifting sand because they've thrown out the foundation. So that's old Europe, no surprise there. We've been watching them capitulate to the forces of darkness for centuries. In fact, that's why most of us are here. So we fled the godlessness of Europe, the corruption, 400 years ago, 500 years ago. It's been quite some time. So anyway, for those of you who think that this must be the end of the world, well, I mean, Europe has hung on in a godless state of capitulation for nearly half a millennia. But things seem to happen faster in America. That's for sure. So perhaps you are justified in your concern that perhaps it's time to put on the sandwich boards and head out onto the street corners. The end is near. So let's come back to America. Although we will visit a foreign country, we're going to go to Michigan. This is from thesmokinggun.com. Deshaun and Juron Shivers were convicted last week of robbery and conspiracy. The brothers remanded to the Saginaw County Jail following the jury verdict. Each face a maximum of 15 years in custody when they are sentenced next month. If sent to prison, they will join their twin brother, triplets, Devon, in prison. Devon Shivers is locked up until at least February of 2042. Following his sentence last year for home invasion, weapons possession, and assault with intent to commit murder, the Shivers triplets turned 22 in January. You know, this reminds me of, if you've ever watched that show, Intervention, the first segment of the show shows the disastrous, catastrophic state of whatever addict they're covering that week. It shows their life. And then the second segment always opens with a baby picture of that same addict who you just met and were repulsed by. And then you see that baby picture, and you just wonder what went wrong. And then, of course, the show Intervention, they tell you what went wrong. And invariably, there are the same elements in every story. There's divorce, typically, and abuse, sexual, psychological, physical abuse, abandonment. All the ingredients of the cocktail that is daily life in Western civilization as we know it today. I can't help but picture in my mind a baby picture of the Shivers triplets, three beautiful little baby boys born 22 years ago. And they are the fruit of our civilization as we have turned it over to so-called science and abandoned what was religion and what is now being called superstition. So now the religious are superstitious, and we can rely on science. We can rely on knowledge. We can rely on the state. That's another thing that's fairly common in the drug addicts and the people who've been broken and destroyed on the TV program Intervention is state intervention early on in their lives. State intervention that lingers into young adulthood, even adulthood. We can't rely on the state, ladies and gentlemen. And we can't rely on science because science changes all the time. New discoveries. We find out we were wrong about things. We find out things weren't as we thought they were. The one thing we can rely on, the one thing that has not changed, is the rock, the Word of God, the Word of His Son, Jesus Christ, who created all of it. And He will either save it or judge it, ladies and gentlemen. He has the answers, and we need to seek out those answers. Because if we don't, well, He's going to bring them to us, but He's not going to be happy about it. And if you think this incident was terrifying and horrific, well, to fall into the hands of the living God is a terrible thing, ladies and gentlemen. So I would ask that you seek Him now. Because we can find peace and healing and reconciliation no matter how horrific events seem to be. There is hope, but it is only in that one man and in His Word. And there are no other answers. There are no psychobabblers who can give you answers. There are no TV anchors. There are no policemen. There are no mayors. There are no governors. There are no presidents who can give you the answer that you're looking for, so that your mind can be calmed in the face of this violence. There is only one man. I don't have the answer, said the Monsignor at the Catholic Church. And it's okay to say that, Monsignor. But you might have appended that with, but I know who has the answer. And then you might have even stated his name, Jesus Christ, although the AP might not have printed it. All right. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. U.S. District Judge James C. Fox has ruled that it's unconstitutional for North Carolina to issue pro-life license plates. He ruled last Friday that North Carolina cannot produce or distribute a Choose Life plate. Here's what the judge concluded. Quote, the state's offering of a Choose Life license plate in the absence of a pro-choice plate constitutes viewpoint discrimination in violation of the First Amendment. Viewpoint discrimination. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know all the precedents and all of that. Certainly no legal expert, but I get the feeling that this judge made that up on the spot. I've just never heard that. Viewpoint discrimination. Did he just make that up? Or maybe if I have some great legal minds in the audience, you can tell me, oh, no, Doug, viewpoint discrimination, that's a well-established precedent. Yeah. Even so, I would be quite dissatisfied with the judge's thinking on that. The American Civil Liberties Union of North Carolina Legal Foundation had filed a lawsuit, as you can well imagine, as soon as the idea of a license plate that just says Choose Life. As soon as that idea was floated, the ACLU was lawyering up there in South Carolina. What a schizophrenic ruling. How can you say that a state must celebrate life and advocate killing at the same time? What does this teach the people? And do judges any longer have an interest in teaching people right from wrong? I think not. I don't think they have that in their minds when they rule on things like this any longer. And I think it's probably because the judges in question, they no longer know right from wrong themselves. We've been taught for 40 years, 50 years, that the killing of innocent people is justified in certain circumstances. In fact, it should be supported and celebrated. In fact, it's enshrined in our Constitution as a God-given right to murder innocent people. And that leads to schizophrenic rulings like this. That leads to violence, murder, bloodshed, suicide, all of it. The fruits of the rotten tree that has grown out of our capitulation to the heathens. And I'm accusing the church today to its face. The Church of Jesus Christ has failed the world. And I'm a part of the church. I accept responsibility. What are we going to do about it? Ladies and gentlemen, when you have the opportunity, you must not shy away from stating in public so that other people can hear you that Jesus Christ is the only answer. And say it publicly. Don't be afraid anymore. We've got to come out of the closet or we're going to be shoved into ovens before too long. Ladies and gentlemen. Now, speaking of coming out of the closet, this is something I've been aware of. Some of you may have been aware of it, but we're going to go to Washington, D.C. for some sanity, which rarely occurs, almost never, do you go to Washington, D.C. to find a sane perspective on life. Well, last week, in an interview with NBC in Washington, NFL sensation Robert Griffin III told WRC-TV sports reporter Dan Helley that his biggest fear in coming to Washington, D.C. to be an NFL quarterback, his biggest fear was God. Helley asked the Washington Redskins star quarterback, he said, quote, everybody fears something. What was your biggest fear coming to Washington, D.C. to be an NFL quarterback, unquote. Robert Griffin responded, quote, you try not to fear too many things. I fear God, unquote. Okay. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I fear God, said said Robert Griffin III. And the whole congregation said hallelujah. RG3 also told the reporter that he fears his parents, saying, you don't want to let people down. And some would say that's pressure, but I didn't fear it. I wanted people to know that I don't plan on letting you guys down. And I don't want to let anybody down. So that's why I work hard. That's why I believe in myself. And I trust myself when I'm out there on the field. Robert Griffin III was selected by the Redskins in the second pick as the second pick of last year's draft. Prior to the draft, Griffin played college football at Baylor University, where he won the Heisman Trophy in 2011 and where he was well known as a Christian. Because when Robert Griffin III has an opportunity to give an answer for the hope that lies within him, he's not afraid, and he said it in public. Thank heaven that the Redskins are allowing at least one Christian role model to play while Tim Tebow remains in purgatory. The Jets are the evening game today. I believe they're kicking off right about now, so we don't know if Tebow will be released from purgatory. But you know what this brings to mind for me, ladies and gentlemen, is to keep in mind that God wants you. People wonder, what's the meaning of life? Well, the meaning of life is to have a relationship with your Creator that can be consummated at the end of this physical portion of our life. That is the meaning of life. And God wants you. But God doesn't need you. Because if you fail Him, He will raise up someone else. Because His story and His fame and His power and His love is so strong that even when His children fail Him, as we all have, He will raise up another generation. He will raise up another man. He will raise up thousands, ladies and gentlemen. But the question is, which side do you want to be on? The side that failed Him? The side that handed over our civilization and the education of our children to godless heathen pervert deviants and destroyed the country and left us with bloodshed and murder and mourning and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth? Or do you want to be one of the men who stand up? Stand up next to RG3. Stand up next to Tim Tebow. Stand up next to Bob Enyart. Stand up next to the remnant that remains. Stand up with the remnant that remains. And publicly state and teach the world where the answers are. Well, I'm with RG. Okay, that's all. And I had the opportunity, as a matter of fact, in a professional situation, as the details of the shooting were being reported. I was in a professional environment with a number of other professionals, and certain people made comments about, well, that's what happens with all these guns. And other people said, no, that's what happens when you've got crazy people. And I said, you know, this is what happens when you kick God out of society. When you banish God from society, people go crazy and there's bloodshed, murder. Families are broken. That's what's happening. And nobody argued with me. Nobody called me a religious fanatic, because at the moment everyone was in shock at the horror of 20 children being massacred, first graders. And ladies and gentlemen, I fear that these incidents will continue and they will increase in frequency and intensity. And when we have the opportunity to speak to our fellow man, we must speak the truth. And keep in mind that the God we serve, His story and His fame and His power and His love is so strong that the mouths of all those who hate us in the face of tragedies like these will be silenced when we stand up for the truth. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. Even when it's time. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I just couldn't interrupt that song. I needed that. Do I want to do... I have other news. I mean, I have this transgender basketball player. I don't know. I had the whole show... I had a structure for the show planned earlier in the week, but... I don't know if I can relate all this to... Anyway, 6 foot 6 inch, 220-pound Gabrielle Ludwig is now a woman. She was a man. She's playing basketball at Mission College out in Santa Clara, California. Last week, according to the Sun-Times, Ludwig gathered her 10 teammates at practice and offered to quit. This was their time to shine, she told the group of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. She didn't want to be a distraction for the team, but the other young women said that if Ludwig didn't play, they wouldn't either. That's right. So to the millennials, the deviants are now heroes. And those of us who call on the name of the Lord, we're superstitious. Anti-science. The team, these young millennials on the basketball team, they said that Gabrielle Ludwig, formerly Jack Ludwig, I don't know what its name was, but they said Ludwig is the glue holding the team together. This is a transgendered freak of nature, deviant pervert, is held up as a hero by these millennials. And what does Ludwig have to say? She says, quote, "I got exactly what I always wanted, just to fit in and be normal like everyone else," unquote. And you call me homophobic if you want to. I'll admit that I am. But when you normalize deviant, destructive, perverted behavior, ladies and gentlemen, you destroy the foundations of civilization and those festering hatreds that are always under the surface of every civilized society begin to burst forth. Whether you normalize drug use, whether you normalize atheism, whether you normalize rebellion, or whether you normalize something as full-blown, disgusting, and perverted as homosexual transgenderism, they all lead down that same wide path that leads to destruction. And Jesus said that it would be better if a man were to teach young children a lie, that it would be better that a millstone be hung around his neck and he be cast into the deepest part of the sea. And for you parents out there, in handing your children over to this godless culture, letting them watch TV, letting them be on the internet, and letting them go to these godless government schools, in handing them over, you're putting yourself in the way of a millstone. Ludwig has been coaching other people's children since around 2000, according to this article, and her transition from male coach to female coach 5 years ago raised some questions, but then parents generally accepted her decision warmly as they cast civilization into the fiery pits of hell and taught their children a lie that everything's going to be okay, even if you decide to rebel against your creator in your own physical body and do those things that God has clearly said is an abomination and leads to death. It's okay, Johnny. It's okay, Sally. It's going to be okay, and your school is safe. All right, quickly to the war file before we run out of time. I told you, ladies and gentlemen, not to be surprised if this whole fiasco that occurred at Benghazi would in some part be related to governing officials getting drunk, getting high, and having sex, and just generally not paying attention to what's going on. Well, here's a story from the Cable on their foreign policy post. The Obama administration's Asia team was caught so off guard by North Korea's December 11th rocket launch, several of them actually had to put down their drinks and suddenly leave a holiday party. Several top U.S. officials were relaxing Tuesday night at the Japanese ambassador's residence in Washington, partying, when the news came that North Korea had launched an Unha 3 rocket with the ability for intercontinental ballistic delivery. Just minutes before the launch, several officials were overheard remarking how nice it was that Korea had been had decided to delay the launch, giving North Korea watchers in the government hope that their holiday festivities would not be interrupted. Here's a quote from one unnamed governing official who's supposed to be paying attention to North Korea. This official says, quote, "Nobody in the government thought this would happen when it did." As someone who was at the party. And they name all these officials who were at the party. It's quite the list. Yeah. Several attendees said the fact that so many Asia officials were not at their desk illustrated how surprised the administration was about the timing of the launch. So they had the timeline wrong. They decided to go get drunk and get high and chase skirts instead of being at their desk watching for the launch of the next threat from the madman in North Korea, Kim Jong-un. So they were getting drunk, getting high, chasing skirts. I wonder if a similar story will be told when Tel Aviv or some other similar city is nuked by the fanatics in Iran. Be dropping drinks at the ambassador's residence, running back to their desk, trying to figure out what's going on. All right. From the politics file, Hillary Clinton states that the dog has eaten her homework in regards to the Benghazi story. That's right. Clinton, Hillary that is, has been suffering from a stomach virus for some time, according to CNN, for some time. I think she's been suffering from the stomach virus ever since the ambassador and the Navy SEALs and the other employee were killed and she was asked to testify about it. She's had an acute stomach issue. She is being monitored by doctors and she is recovering, but she was never hospitalized. Surprise of all surprises, the dog ate her homework and she received a concussion, mysteriously. A senior State Department official said that she fainted earlier last week and that she received a concussion that was, quote, not severe, unquote. Not severe, but, I mean, you know, Secretary Clinton had been scheduled to testify on Capitol Hill this coming Thursday about the attack in Benghazi on September 11th that killed four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador. A spokeswoman for Democrat Senator John Kerry, Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman. I got to spit when I say that. Not only that, he's going to be the Secretary of State, a full-on traitor who accused his fellow soldiers of horrific crimes against humanity is going to be the Secretary of State, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, Kerry's office said in a statement that Clinton would not testify before his committee on Thursday. Senator Kerry does say that he was relieved to hear that Secretary Clinton is on the mend from her stomach a virus or concussion or whatever's next. The dog ate my homework and I'm just not prepared to. Apparently, two deputy secretaries of state will testify before the committee, so don't worry, folks. Don't keep move along. There's nothing to see here. The September 11th, 2012 attack, you'll remember, resulted in the deaths of four Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. And according to CNN, the attack called into question the security of U.S. diplomatic personnel abroad. Well, CNN, it called into question an awful lot more than that. But we wouldn't expect you to report on the facts since you're part of the government media complex that has apparently been handed total control on top of everything else. From the long war file from Washington, President Obama said last week that the United States will formally recognize a coalition of Syrian opposition groups as Syria's legitimate representatives. It marks a new phase of American engagement. This is according to the New York Times. A new phase, really, New York Times. We've been arming and supporting Islamists since the Arab Spring started. Is this really a new phase? Maybe in Syria? According to the New York Times, a once disparate band of opposition groups have begun to coalesce under pressure from the United States and its allies to develop what American officials say is a credible transition plan to govern Syria if Mr. Assad is forced out. Yes, I think it can all be found in Sharia law. They have a credible transition plan. Certainly they do. Mr. Obama does say that not everybody who is participating on the ground in fighting Assad are people that we are comfortable with. Unquote. Jeez. Sometimes the Islamists, you know, who shoot women in the head. And refuse to allow little girls to get an education. And kill Christians. Well, that makes Mr. Obama uncomfortable. That's okay. That's about enough of that. Another story here from Atlas Shrugs 2000. I don't know if this is a reliable news source, but they say a new U.S. military handbook for troops deployed to the Middle East orders soldiers not to make derogatory comments about the Taliban or pedophilia. Apparently, Islamists, especially the top leadership, they practice pedophilia quite regularly. And apparently American soldiers are a little bit shocked by this, and they've insulted some of our Taliban. You know, now that the Taliban is going to be part of the coalescing of governing transitional forces, we don't want our soldiers to insult them. Also, they tell them don't make derogatory. Here's what they say: don't make derogatory comments about the Taliban. Don't advocate women's rights. Don't criticize pedophilia, and don't mention homosexuality or homosexual conduct.
I thought you were fighting for this. Supposed to be fighting for that.
We're supposed to be fighting for what?
All those reasons.
We're supposed to be fighting for women's rights, for homosexuals, and pedophiles.
No, to up, you know.
We're supposed to be trying to stop that, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, I think that apparently it's tolerated in the highest reaches of Islamic government, homosexuality and pedophilia and the repression of women. So it doesn't matter if we don't overthrow those things as long as we win. See, as long as we win the war and set up a government that doesn't bomb us, apparently we're okay with the pedophilia, the repression of women, and the homosexuality. I don't know. And if you think that we're going to install these governments that are shot through with queers and pedophiles, and that they're not going to be an existential threat to us in the not-too-distant future, well, you're just insane. You've lost your mind. You're certainly not qualified to be advising our troops how to act or behave. Now, one good note, if this is even true, I don't even know if this story is true. This is reported by Judicial Watch. I've found them to be credible in the past, but this strikes me as something you'd read in The Onion. But the good news, U.S. Marine General John Allen, the top commander in Afghanistan, does not endorse this new Army manual, and he's rejected a proposed draft by Army officials. His office apparently said, quote, "General Allen does not approve of its contents." That's according to a military spokesman who could not say anything publicly because he didn't want to be construed as insulting the Taliban, advocating for women's rights, or criticizing pedophilia or homosexuality. So he had to speak on condition of anonymity. I don't care about this story. From the Forces of Darkness file, billionaire investors Warren Buffett and George Soros are calling on Congress to increase the estate tax. That's right. Buffett, Soros, and more than 20 other extremely wealthy individuals asked Congress to lower the estate taxes exemption to $2 million from a little over $5 million and raise the top rate to over 45%. So these rich bastards, communist scum. Now, I know, you think they're capitalists, right? But they're not. They're part of the government media complex. They've gotten theirs, and now they want to stifle competition and keep anyone from competing with them. And they'll buy up the family businesses that are bankrupted as the estate tax, which is completely immoral. As the estate tax is elevated, they'll buy up these small businesses that might have competed with them, especially the family farms. Yeah, they're big international conglomerate farming operations will buy up all these small farms that they steal from Americans because they got theirs and they don't want you getting any piece. They can afford to pay these taxes and they'll find ways out of it because they'll be exempted from it because they're part of the ruling class who apparently have been handed total control. All right. Meanwhile, in France, France's best-known actor Gérard Depardieu has taken up residence in Belgium along with hundreds of other wealthy French nationals because of the tax increases in France. And so we've got a communist bastard in France who's yelling at these rich people. He's calling them unpatriotic because they're fleeing the confiscatory taxes of the new communists who've taken over in Europe. Socialist Minister of Parliament Jan Galut has called for Depardieu to be stripped of his nationality if he failed to pay dues in his mother country, saying the law should be changed to enable such a punishment. So you know what these commies want to do? They want to establish a law so that if you want to leave the country, you have to pay a huge fee. This is what the Germans did to the Jews in Germany in World War II. Yeah, you can leave the country. We'll let you leave with your life, but you're going to leave practically naked and with no money, and we get all your property. And here we are. We're reliving it again, ladies and gentlemen. They say those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. I say those who don't know God are doomed to repeat the horrific events of history. Meanwhile, in the UK, from the Bad Religion file, the Jedi religion has made it onto the 2000 has made it into the census as the second most popular alternative faith. No, it's the number one most popular alternative faith, the Jedi religion. Yeah, a note to all you Scientologists. Jedi is the next big thing. Another one from the Bad Religion file. Just after midnight last Wednesday, police officers were dispatched to a home in Richland Hills, Texas. After a man identified by police as Brent Troy Bartell called 911 and he said this, quote, "I shed some innocent blood," unquote. That's what he said on the 911 call. When the dispatcher asked the man what he meant, the man said, quote, "I inscribed a pentagram on my son." And when the dispatcher asked why, the man said, "Well, this is a holy day." Yeah, that was 12-12-12 last Wednesday. The man said it was a holy day. So the father's call to 911 was placed at 12:10 a.m., just minutes after the day 12-12-12 began. The date is not known, according to NBC in Dallas, the date is not known to have any holy or religious significance, though along with 12-21-12 has drawn attention from numerologists and those concerned with doomsday prophecies. So here we have just one more unstable soul awash in a world without God, full of superstition and violence. Outside of a small remnant who still call upon the name of the Lord, this is a man awash in a world that offers no answers and only the promise of more innocent blood to come. So join the remnant, ladies and gentlemen. Speak up in the face of the violence and the bloodshed and the lies that are being taught to our children. Stand with the remnant who call upon the name of the Lord. Don't be ashamed of the gospel. Because if we abandon the gospel, if we abandon him, ladies and gentlemen, he may abandon us, and we don't want to be alone. We don't want to be left alone. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to be left alone. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGov, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Darrow, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.